Hello and welcome to Torah Dimecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Alana Glatt, and today we will be studying Sefer Shmuel Aleph Perek Yud Tet, Chapter 19. Before we dive into today's perek, let's quickly review where we last left off in yesterday's perek. Yesterday, in Perek Yud Chet, we watched as David continued to rise with incredible Siyata Dishmaya, earning the love of the people, the deep loyalty of Yonatan, and even becoming part of Shaul's own family, marrying his righteous daughter Michal. But at the very same time, beneath the surface, Shaul's fear and suspicion were quietly intensifying, and what began as tension is now about to turn into something much more open and dangerous. Today, as we turn to Perek Yud Tet, this unfortunate story will only begin to heat up even further. Where things stand as of this moment, Shaul has not succeeded in harming David, despite having attempted to throw his spear at him twice and sending him directly into the line of fire with the Plishtim. Seeing David's invincibility, Shaul decides now, in today's perek, to recruit his own son, Yonatan, to help in his campaign against his perceived enemy, David. Pasuk Aleph opens up our learning. Vayidaber Shaul al Yonatan beno ve'al kol avadav lahamit at David. V'Yonatan ben Shaul chafetz b'David me'od. Shaul spoke to his son Yonatan and to all of his servants about killing David. But Yonatan, Shaul's son, liked David very much. Pasuk bet, V'yaged Yonatan leDavid leMor, mevakesh Shaul avi lahamitecha, v'yata, hishamer na baboker, v'yashafta b'seter, v'nechbeta. So Yonatan told David, my father Shaul is trying to kill you. Be on your guard tomorrow morning. Get to a secret place immediately and remain in hiding. And Pasuk Gimel, V'ani etze v'amadati liyad avi v'sadeh asher ata sham, v'ani adaber b'cha el avi v'ra'iti ma v'higadati lach. I will go out and stand near my father in the field where you will be. And I will speak to my father about you. I will try my absolute best to see if somehow I can help him realize how mistaken his perception is of you. I'll listen carefully to see what happens from that conversation. And if I learn of anything, I will tell you right away. So now, in Psukim Dalet through Zion, Yonatan goes out and he speaks favorably about David with his father Shaul. He says to him, let the king not sin against his servant David, for David has not done anything wrong against you, nor has he sinned against you in any way. It's actually quite the opposite. He has accomplished incredible things for you. Everything he has done has been very much to your advantage. He risked his life to confront and kill the fearsome Goliath, and all of the Bnei Israel were saved through him. Hashem clearly performed these miracles for Bnei Israel on his behalf because he's a tzaddik. You even rejoiced when you heard of the victory. Why then would you want to incur the guilt of spilling innocent blood? Shaul listened to all that Yonatan told him. And Shaul swore to his son Yonatan, by the life of Hashem, he will not die. Although we will see that these words of Shaul, unfortunately, will not last very long, the Psukim seem to direct us that at least in this very moment, a rare moment of clarity, Shaul was moved by the words and musar of his son Yonatan, and that he was indeed sincere. Hearing this positive response from his father Shaul, Yonatan excitedly called David and told him that it was safe for him to return to the palace. And so David returned to playing the harp for Shaul, as he had been doing before. But unfortunately, this peaceful moment did not last very long. Pasuk Chet, the Plishtim once again came out to attack. The Mabim suggests that it was actually in response to David's battle to procure the 100 Plishti foreskins that we learned about in yesterday's perek in order to marry Michal. And the Bnei Israel found themselves at war once again with their fierce rivals. But as we saw in our previous perek, once David courageously joined the battle, he was able to deliver them such a powerful blow that they quickly fled, fearing for their lives. The Bnei Israel were again miraculously saved. But again, instead of calling favor in Shaul's eyes for this miraculous victory, opening his eyes to the clear Hashkachat Hashem that's going on here, Psukim Teth through Yod tell us that Hashem's spirit of melancholy befell Shaul once again while he was sitting in his house with his spear in his hand. At this point, it's worth pausing here for just a moment and taking stock of what we've already begun to see and will continue to see. On the surface level, Shaul appears overtaken by jealousy towards David. But there are two pshat points that don't take to that approach and that strongly support how Chazal and the Mefarshim understand this great tzaddik. First, whenever this Ruach Ra is described as coming upon Shaul, the psukim emphasize that it is from Hashem. That very point is significant. The text isn't presenting this as a personal failing. It's something which Hashem brings about, and we'll need to explore further why. But it means that the erratic behavior, the pursuits of David, all of it, is not being portrayed as full personal culpability. It's part of a divinely driven process. Second, the Navi never hesitates to criticize even the greatest of figures. Even Shaul himself was rebuked harshly earlier with his mistakes by Gilgal and in the battle against Amalek. But here, through all of this, there's no condemnation from the psukim of Shaul in the text. It's true that both David and Yonatan speak out, but the psukim very notably don't. So we need to be careful. Shaul is not descending into wickedness. He's a tzaddik who made a critical mistake, a mistake which has consequences. But what follows is not framed as ongoing transgression. It's framed as something from Hashem, which has to be understood on completely different terms. We'll Bezrat Hashem hopefully continue to explore this more together. But for now, back to our story for today. Our story continues that David, this time perhaps a bit more cautiously, continued to play his harmonious melodies to cheer up the king on his harp, just as he always did. But while he was gracefully striking beautiful music on the chords of his harp, Shaul again attempted to thrust a spear through David and into the wall. And again, quite miraculously, David managed to quickly slip away in the nick of time, and the spear hit the wall. Knowing that his life was now in grave danger, David quickly bolted home as fast as he could. But things don't quiet down. Now the next adventurous part of our story will begin to unfold in Psukim Yud Aleph through Yud Zayin. The Psukim tell us that that night, while David believed he was safe in his own home, Shaul sent messengers to secretly keep a quiet watch on him, and he ordered them that when David would leave his home in the morning, they should take him and have him killed. The Radak notes that Shaul did not want David to be killed in front of his daughter Michal, and so he asked the guards to wait until morning when David would walk out of his home on his own, and in that way they could then take him away before he would be killed. David's righteous wife Michal noticed, though, that something was amiss. She realized that they were being watched. And so she told David, "If you don't escape from here somehow tonight, then you're going to be killed tomorrow." So what did they do? As Shaul's soldiers stood guard at the front door, Michal sneakily helped David escape through a window on the side of the house. She lowered him carefully down with a rope, invoking imagery of Rachav lowering down the spies in Sefer Yehoshua by rope, until he was able to get up on his own two feet and run far, far away from there. Our rabbis teach us that David actually composed Perek Nun Tet of Tehillim on this very night, singing out the words, "Lamnatzeach at hashchit leDavid michtam, b'shloach Shaul v'yishmeru et habayit lahamito, hatzileni me'oivai Elokai mimit komemai tisagveni." For the conductor at hashchit of David of michtam, when Shaul sent and they guarded the house to slay him, "Save me from my enemies, my God, strengthen me against those who rise up against me." Now, hoping to buy some time for David to make his grand escape, the pasuk tells us, Pasuk Yud Gimel, "Vatikach Michal et hatrafim, vatasem el hamita, ve'etz kfir ha'izim sama miroshotav, vatichas babaged." Michal, David's wife, then took trafim, which is translated by many mefarshim as human-like mannequins, though there are those of the opinion that the word trafim is the same as in the story with Rachel when she wrongly took the trafim, the idols, of her father Lavan. And she laid the mannequin on the bed, she covered it with a cloth, and at its head she put a net of goat's hair. I didn't see this inside anywhere, but I find the imagery striking, almost reminding us somewhat of the scene of Rivka dressing up Yaakov with goat's hair to appear more like Esav, his brother, in order to receive the blessings, and now Michal dressing up the mannequin to appear like David, who was also redheaded in appearance like Esav. I don't know, just something interesting to think about. And in the morning, when Shaul's messengers forced their way into the house, ready to follow out the king's orders, Michal pointed to the bed, stuffed with pillows and a mannequin. And she told them that her husband David was sick and that he couldn't be bothered to get up or go anywhere at this current moment. When they relayed this to Shaul, Shaul was not pleased, and he commanded the guards to go back immediately to check in on David and to bring him over to him while he was still in his bed. So the messengers came back right away, and they went to check on David as they were commanded. But when they began to remove the covers, they were shocked to find that there was no one in the bed after all. It was just a fake mannequin that was covered in goatskin at its head. When the servants relayed this all to Shaul, Shaul was aghast. He immediately summoned his daughter Michal and asks her, "How could you have deceived me in this way? How could you trick me like this? You sent away my enemy so that he would be able to escape?" And Michal, realizing that she would be held responsible for rebelling against the king here, she had to change the facts in self-defense. And so she responded to her father that David threatened her, telling her that she either had to help him with this ploy to escape or he would kill her. Michal stressed to her father that she had no choice here. She was truly stuck. So Shaul heard Michal and he dismisses her. And Pasuk Yirchat tells us that David managed to flee and escape just as they had hoped and planned that he'd be able to do. And he actually came all the way to Shmuel in Ramah. It's interesting. We don't see David having much of a relationship with Shmuel in the Psukim from the time he's anointed until now. And David tells Shmuel all that Shaul has done to him. And so they both went together and they stayed at a place called Nayot. The Radak brings forth an interesting midrash here. And he says, the Rabu Zatzal, our rabbis, Rabotinu Zechonam Levracha, Amru, Ma Inyan Nayot Etzel Rama, Ella, Shahayu Yoshvin Birama, the Oskin Binyav Shal Olam, Klomar Bebeta Migdash, Klomar Beeza Makomihiye. Our rabbis asked, what connection is there between Rama, where they were, and Nayot, where they went to? And they say, it's not meant to teach us about a different place, rather to tell us that what did Shmuel and David do? They actually sat in Rama, and while they were there, they were busy discussing the Biniyah, the construction of the world, meaning the Beis HaMikdash. They were discussing where precisely the Beis HaMikdash would be built one day. It's truly praiseworthy of David HaMelech that at a time of grave danger, at a time of him running away from Shaul's messengers who wanted to put him to death, he was able to have the presence of mind to not only learn Torah from the great Shmuel himself, maybe to gain comfort from him as well, but he was able to think about the future, to begin to plan for something eternal for Am Yisrael. It reminds me of an episode from the life of the great and influential Shach, Rabbi Shabtai HaKohen, one of the greatest Torah scholars of his generation and the noteworthy commentator on the Shulchan Aruch, on Choshen Mishpat, and on Yoredeah. The Shach unfortunately lived through the time of the Chmelnytsky massacres known as the Gzeirot Tach V'Tat, and he himself had to run away from the destruction which left him extremely shaken. But something remarkable is that early on in Choshen Mishpat, in the midst of a very detailed analysis of the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, the Shach writes there that he didn't have all of his Sfarim on him at that moment because he was on the run from the murderers. But this is what he remembers best, and that's what he continues to write in that tshuva. As he was running away from the murderers, he was busy writing his insights on intricate details of an obscure law in monetary law. From our great King David HaMelech himself to other incredible leaders throughout the ages, Torah was and always will be our greatest anchor. Now back to our perek. Psukim Yud Tet through Chaf Dalet now conclude our storyline for today by telling us that word got back to Shaul that David had escaped to Nayot in Ramah. So he immediately sent officers out to arrest David at once. But then, when they arrived, they saw a group of Nevi'im who were prophesying, being overseen by the great Shmuel himself, and the spirit of Hashem came upon the messengers as they began prophesying along with them. Hearing this, Shaul then sent another group of messengers to detain David. But again, the second group of messengers began to prophesy together with the group as well. This happens again with a third group of messengers until Shaul decides that this is incredulous and that he will have to carry out this mission himself. So Shaul went out to Ramah himself in order to find Shmuel and David. But the Pesukim tell us that when he arrives himself, he too is overtaken by the Spirit of Hashem, and he too began prophesying. The Pesukim note that he took off his royal garments in order to truly be able to immerse in this spiritual experience completely. And the Perek now concludes with the people repeating a refrain which we learned all the way back in Perek Yud when Shaul was first becoming king. Hagam Shaul b'Nevi'im? Is Shaul also among the Nevi'im? As Shaul here became deeply immersed in this bout of prophecy the entire day and night. This closing line for today's Perek, Hagam Shaul b'Nevi'im, is a powerful reminder that no matter how far things seem to spiral, and they're unfortunately only going to continue to spiral further in tomorrow's Perek, ultimately, Hashem is the one fully in control, and he is the true orchestrator guiding events in ways no one could have predicted, and he will continue to protect David at every turn along the way. Thank you so much for learning this Perek together. Today's Perek is dedicated to the safety and peace of Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. May the words of Nach uplift us and give us strength during these challenging times.